Welcome, sports fans, to the first 2025 edition of the Queen City Sports Podcast, along with Mark Raines. I'm Chris Ball. How you doing, Mark? How's your new year going so far?
So far, so good. Recording this morning, so I've traded in my bourbon for a little coffee. I'm ready to go on this Friday morning, and I just want to say Happy New Year to you, and more importantly, happy birthday. Welcome to the Club 40.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. My birthday was yesterday. It was a great day. My family made it really special. So I really much appreciate it. So 40's looking pretty good for me. So happy to be here, especially talking with you 2025, start of something new and hopefully a start of some good stuff for the Bengals as well as we talk about their recent victory against the Denver Broncos. And Mark, this was another one where I'm going to have to say it was just an up and down. You know, your blood pressure's boiling. At least mine was. I know it's several points in this game, and to come out with a win when we needed it is spectacular. But to get there, it was not easy on the nerves, I'll tell you that.
And you knew it wouldn't be because it's the Bengals, but I do think they really controlled a lot of the game. I think they had 170 more yards of offense than Denver. I know it's going to feel like a fluky win because of the way it went down in overtime, but I do think it was kind of fluky that we were even in overtime. And I do want to talk a little bit. I know the big controversy is that kind of end of regulation sequence. So I do want to talk a little bit of that because I think I do have a little bit of a counter view of that than some of the other people.
Yeah, we can start from the beginning, I guess, and I know we're going to get to that end and then the overtime as well. What did you think about the Bengals, you know, going for it on fourth down two times there, you know, in the first quarter and not getting it both times? I think I agree with the calls to go for it there in both those situations. The play calling, though, I think left a little bit to be desired for those plays.
I'm fine going for it. I'm not even going to be too critical of the play calling. I probably would have thrown it on the first fourth down. And the second one was just a play. I think everything was covered. They put it in Burrow's hands, and Burrow bought plenty of time like he has all year, and he just wasn't able to find anybody in the end zone. So I didn't have a big problem with the second one. And the thing about the second one is it's exactly why you go for it deep in their territory, is the Bengals defense got a three and out with them in a vulnerable position, and the Bengals came and scored a touchdown right after that. So I mean that it's not just that you're not getting the field goal, but you're putting them in a position where your offense is going to have an easier time scoring a touchdown the next time, and it's putting Denver in a bad position on defense. So that one in particular, I was had absolutely no problem with. And I'm going to talk about this a lot. I am thrilled with how Zach Taylor's been calling games in the last 4 or 5 weeks. He is not called scared like he did early in the season, where I thought he was, the Ravens game is the best example, where he ran it three times and kicked the 50 plus yard field goal. But throughout, he wasn't going for it on fourth downs when he needed to. He was sending out the kicker. I love how aggressive he has been on fourth down, and you're not going to get everyone. That's how it works. But for this team to be the best, he needs to be aggressive on those plays. He's consistently been aggressive. I had no problem with him going for it on any of those. I'm not going to even make a big deal out of the play call, even though I probably would have kept it in Burrow's hands on the first one.
Right. And I think, you know, Zach Taylor, as to his credit, understands the urgency that this team needs to play with. And I'm not going to say he's Dan Campbell, you know, pulling out all the stops and throwing caution to the wind. I think your point is a good one. I mean, these are calculated decisions to not play scared, to play to win, but to also, you know, like you said, if you're deep in an opponent's territory, trust in your defense a little bit. You know, I know trusting the Bengals defense is kind of a dicey proposition, but as you said, I mean, they were able to take the field and force that three and out. And, you know, the Bengals have to drive only 62 yards, you know, for their first touchdown, as opposed to, you know, having to drive 70, 80 yards. So I think those plays worked out pretty well. And the defense did all right in the first quarter. So, you know, and then Denver kind of came back and tied it and, you know, went from there. I guess I kind of want to get your take on the defense in general this game and how you felt they played overall. Because for me, I thought, you know, towards the end of the game when the Broncos had that, you know, I'm not going to call it a Hail Mary, but it was terrible coverage. I mean, you had two guys on Denver's wide receiver and he still managed to catch it. And I don't see how you allow that to happen.
It was a great catch. I don't know. I thought the defense performance was the best of the season, given the context, given the competition level. They did it against a real team, a real coach, a real offense. It wasn't perfect. I think Knicks still was 24 for 31. That's pretty efficient. Only 219 yards on that. And one of those was on that one really big play. That was really the one time I thought they really got burnt. But other than that, I thought the defense was solid in pass coverage, which it's not always been the case this year. They didn't do great against the run, but they made enough plays against the run. I mean, McLaughlin ran for 6'9" a carry, 10 carries, 69 yards. The other guys are Estima, or I can't even pronounce his name. I think he struggled a little more. So they ran it fairly efficiently, and that was disappointing, but they also got enough stops. So given the context, I thought it was their best performance of the year, and I get it. Maybe part of that is Knicks is still a rookie quarterback and he's not great about processing the way some of the veterans are against this defense. But to be fair, Daniels torched this defense and he's a rookie quarterback and it was earlier in the season. So all things considered, I thought this was the best they played all year. And I know you're saying the coverage wasn't great on that last play. That was a phenomenal catch. It was a contested catch. The Bengals got their hand on the ball. I actually had some questions about whether he held it long enough before he slid out of bounds because the Bengals corner had it, or I can't remember, it was a corner or safety, had his hands on the ball and it was moving around the entire time he's on the ground. So, I mean, I thought it was fine. They called it a touchdown, but like I thought there was some question about that. It's just a great play. I mean, Bengals get pressure on him early. He throws it up into double coverage, and the receiver comes out and makes a phenomenal catch. I w didn't have as big a problem with that play as some people did.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's a great segue to maybe talk about the sequence, that led to that. And I know you have some thoughts there. So it's 24, or sorry, excuse me. I think it was the Bengals were up 24-17. And then, sorry, it was 17-17. The Bengals are driving down. And, I'm not going to have an exact grasp on how much time is left, but essentially, they are trying to bleed the Broncos of their timeouts, and they hand the ball off to Chase Brown. Chase Brown tries to slide before scoring a touchdown and gets injured. So the Bengals have to use their timeout, and you are at second and goal from Denver's 1 yard line with 1:29 left, and you have a choice. You can basically try to bleed them of their timeouts, just, kneel it, do whatever you have to do, or you can go for the touchdown. Mark, what are your thoughts as to the strategy that goes into play there? Do you try to bleed the clock, or do you basically score and force the defense or their offense to take the field and answer in kind?
First of all, was it 1:29? I thought it was closer to 1:40 when that occurred. But here's where I was when I look at that situation. And I kind of want to go back even farther. I love that they were aggressive when they got it kind of inside the 20 because they needed to get another first down to have the chance to burn the clock down. So they didn't just run to make Denver use their timeouts there. They went hard for the first down. They threw that out to Chase Brown. He probably shouldn't have stepped out of bounds on that play on the first pass, but I mean, it's hard with your momentum in that situation. And they got some yards and they got the first down the next play. And now they're in a position where they can run it down. And they could have, I guess, the big critique some people may have is maybe they should have just taken knees and they wouldn't have been in that situation. And they would have left Denver about 20 seconds, is what I saw, if they took knees. I think the reason they ran the ball is they figured if they ran it a couple times, they could bleed it, leave them about 10 seconds instead of 20, give them a couple less plays to get into field goal range if they didn't get the touchdown. So I think that was kind of where they were, which they probably weren't going to get a touchdown if they were playing it that way. They're going to kick the field goal. So I think that was where their head was and why they had Chase Brown run it. So now Chase Brown runs it, he gets it, and they burn the clock. And now you're up 7 with, I thought it was about 1:40. Maybe it was 1:25. But if it's 1:40, they're going to get the ball back with roughly 1 minute left and 3 timeouts. And if they're, or not 3 timeouts, up 3, with less than 1 minute left, or with about 1 minute left. And if the, otherwise, if it's like, if you say it's 1:25, it've been 45 seconds, up 3. I would rather get the touchdown. I'd rather sneak it, get the touchdown, and make them go for 7 at that point, than have them a chance to get a 3 in, 45 seconds to 1 minute. I'd rather have them have to go the length of the field and get a touchdown in that situation. I would not have wanted to risk not getting the touchdown when they're going to have some time to get into field goal range.
And my question too is, I know you're talking about a chip shot field goal. I don't know how much the co lack of confidence maybe in Cade York, played in the decision to have the Bengals, score. But I have to agree. I mean, you're forcing a team. We always talked about this in the podcast before, right? You want to force the team to have to beat you. You don't want to play scared or play, for a tie or whatever. You want to force that team to go down the field and beat you. And unfortunately, that's what the Broncos did. And so it kind of, casts a little bit of question on the decision to score for the Bengals. But absent that great play that you pointed out, I mean, everyone's saying, okay, well, that's the right decision to make to score that touchdown. So it just worked out a little differently because of the magic that, Knicks and the Broncos were able to pull on that subsequent drive.
And people were questioning it in the moment. And again, I get why people were questioning it. And the injury to Chase Brown is the only reason the staff did not run it down. I thought that in the moment, and then Taylor confirmed it after the game because Brown was clearly trying to go down. I do think they would have run it down and kicked a field goal because they're at that point, they're leaving them less than 20 seconds. By running it a couple times, they're probably leaving them, 10 seconds to try to get into field goal range. And that's a lot difference. 10 seconds, no timeouts. That's way different than leaving a team 45 seconds to a minute to get in field goal range, where you only have to complete a couple passes to get to field goal range. And you're going against a defense that doesn't want to get beat over the top because then you lose the game. So that's why you play for the seven once you cannot run it down, so they only have a couple plays left. I think that was the right decision to sneak it once the Chase Brown injury happened. The only argument I'm kind of sympathetic to is maybe just kneel it three times and give them 20 seconds and trust that they're not going to, get into field goal range. But again, it is a scary proposition when you have a couple plays that you just don't want to get beat over the top. So I liked at that point going for the touchdown. I didn't have a huge issue with how Taylor played at the end of the game. It just kind of was one of those weird situations where the injury prevented the Bengals from doing what they wanted to do.
Exactly. I mean, he had a strategy in mind, and I think he adjusted that strategy and did the best he could under the circumstances. So again, winning the game makes it easy to say, that some of the heat's off Zach Taylor. But I was listening to some of the podcasts this week where people were saying that if they had lost that game, Zach Taylor should have been fired, on the spot for that kind of clock management. And I'm not sure I agree with that level of criticism for for all the criticism he maybe does deserve for other things. I just don't. I'm in your camp on this one. I think it was the best he could do under the circumstances. So,
I've been pretty critical of Taylor. I think he's been managing the games really well the last 4 to 5 weeks. I love how aggressive he's been. And again, we kicked that field goal on third down. It was a short chip shot field goal. And it hits the upright. And no one, every coach is almost every coach is going to try to play it that way. But I love the next time out, he's like, you know what? I'm not taking this out of Burrow's hands. He's going to get a chance to win it. And they run that out route on first down, and T. Higgins catches it, and it's game over. And I mean, that's an aggressive play with your season on the line and just trusting your guys. I love how aggressive he's been throughout the last 4 to 5 weeks. I wish he would have been like that the whole season. I think we'd be looking at a different result.
right. And I think, the whole team, right, whether it's Zach Taylor or this entire team, just starting off another year slow, and we're kind of paying for it now, as we'll talk about in a few minutes. But just a few more things I did want to talk about. The defense, for as much, flack as they've gotten in overtime, Denver had six plays for 6 yards, which after you miss that field goal, you think, okay, well, now Denver's going to take over and it's going to be game over. They allowed 2 yards, the defense did, on those three plays that Denver run. And I know some of them were misses by Knicks, that didn't look the greatest, but defense deserves their credit too for how they played in overtime.
Oh, absolutely. And that last set of plays in particular was enormous because at that point, Denver knows they need one first down to get the tie and clinch a playoff spot. So they had three plays that the Bengals had to stop them, and they stopped them. That was an exceptional stand, probably the best defensive stand of the year, even more so than the earlier plays in overtime where Denver still, there was a lot of clock left. Denver would have had to run a lot more plays and make a drive, and the Bengals got off the field quickly, which was great. But man, that three plays, Denver knows all they need is a first down, and the defense made it happen.
I think the last maybe last couple of points I wanted to hit. What did you make of the 7 sacks on Joe Burrow? Does that give you some concern? I know that it was a question. Obviously, they're playing down Amarius Mims, who tried to play but was out with a broken hand, and then Orlando Brown Jr. hasn't played in several weeks. So, but 7 sacks is quite a lot for Joe Burrow and on his body, and it's been a trend that's been going downhill for the past couple of games.
Denver has the best pass rush in the league. They've had it all season. And Burrow sometimes holds the ball a lot, trying to make some plays. And the Bengals' guards aren't very good. And Denver's really good rushing the passer through the middle. I just think all that kind of came together. There were a couple coverage sacks. There were a couple, there were a lot of, defensive lines where they just got to Burrow too quickly for Burrow to do anything. Again, credit to Denver. Their pass rush has been exceptional all year, and they've got multiple guys that can get to the quarterback.
All right, Mark, any final thoughts about Denver before we kind of look ahead to Pittsburgh and what we've got to pray for this upcoming weekend?
And yeah, no final thoughts on that. We got a lot to pray for this weekend.
Yeah, so the next game, of course, Pittsburgh, another primetime night game, this time on Saturday, 8 p.m. against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, obviously, they still have some things to play for. I think some seeding is on their side, and so they are not going to roll over for sure. What are your thoughts on this game, Mark? Obviously, it's a must-win, pull out all the stops for the Bengals. And I personally like the fact that it's going to be on Saturday night because you're going to have all the games we need to watch behind that. So you're going to get the Bengals 100% effort at pulling out all the stops. And I like that aspect of it.
I do too. Well, the last one was for me the low point of the season. It's the last loss the Bengals had, but letting that offense carve the Bengals up for what, 500 plus yards of offense, 414 that Russ threw for, that was the epitome of the worst game of the year. It was awful how the defense played. It wasn't like they were going against an elite quarterback. If they do anything, if they make a stop at the end on the obvious play call, the Bengals have a chance to go win the game. So like the fi that final defensive breakdown was brutal. So I don't know, what are we going to see? Is the defense going to be able to limit what the Steelers offense does? The Steelers offense has not been that good other than that game. They've been fine. They've been better with Russ and when they have Pickens healthy. But they haven't been exceptional. They haven't done anything like that against anybody else. If the Bengals can limit them to like a normal Steelers offensive game, they're going to have every chance to win this game because Bengals offense is going to score on anybody.
And I think, like you said, and we talked about before, Denver's a good team. And the Bengals defense, despite some of the big plays, played very well. And it was the first time we've really seen that against a good team in some while. And the question is, can that transfer over? And if you look at how, like you said, the Steelers played against Philadelphia, right? They scored 13 points, against Baltimore, 17 points, against Kansas City, 10. So again, those aren't defenses necessarily that are towards the top of the league in any category, but it shows you
Kansas
that.
City and Philly are really good on defense. So I know Baltimore struggles in pass defense, but Kansas City and Philly are really good on defense.
Well, at the same time, though, I still think that you're seeing a Pittsburgh offense that is definitely trending downward, and that helps this defense, especially with them trending upwards and finishing it off against Baltimore. So I don't think you can. I don't think that Russell Wilson is going to come out and have the same type of game that he had against the Bengals last time, mostly because this defense knows what it needs to do, and it's shown that it can meet the moment, at
Well,
least these past couple of weeks.
and I think the young guys have really stepped up on defense. We've played a lot more of the young guys. We've seen a lot more of them on the field, and I think they've stepped up to a degree. Again, there are plenty of holes on this defense. I'm not expecting this defense to shut anybody down. But if they can be a below average defense instead of a terrible defense, the offense is good enough to beat anybody.
And I think that's just what you need too. And you're looking at, I'm always concerned about the pass rush. The 7 sacks, against Denver, their pass rush being what it is, I think you're going to see a lot of that same thing, especially with TJ Watt in the lineup. So Amarius Mims maybe not being able to go would be an issue. And I think if you look at the Bengals injury report, it's littered with people that are, questionable this week. And so what role are injuries going to play in this game going forward? It's, yet to be seen.
Well, yeah, and the last Bengals-Steelers game really turned because Joe Burrow lost a couple fumbles, and so I mean that's really where it was is the pass rush got to him and Joe Burrow lost a couple fumbles, and other than that, the Bengals probably win that game. So, and that's I'm not blaming Burrow. Burrow was fantastic other than those couple plays, but he's got to be able to field this pass rush against the Steelers and protect the ball because he's going to be able to make plays against the Steelers defense if he does. And sometimes you just got to take the sack at that point. I know he always is trying to buy time and make the great play, and I'm sure he'll do plenty of that, but he's got to make sure to protect the ball against this pass rush because that's where the other than the defense, who was atrocious, even with that. I think really those plays are what cost the Bengals a chance to win the game, despite how bad the defense has been.
And I really hope Chase Brown can play because the one thing you don't want to do is be one dimensional against the Steelers pass rush. So I think him playing is going to be along with, I don't think Mims, you don't recover from a broken hand, overnight. So I think those two are going to be pretty key to what they need to do, but Chase Brown, especially because the Bengals have to try to run the football against the Steelers, at least to get a little breathing room for Burrow and try to avoid being one dimensional.
Well, and Chase Brown was awesome in the first game against the Steelers. He had 12 carries for 70 yards, so it's 5.8 a carry and a touchdown. He had six receptions for 86 yards and a touchdown reception. So the Bengals used him as an outlet in the receiving game. He ran the ball really well when they ran with him, and they didn't run a ton, but because Burrow throws 38 times because that's what we do best. But he ran really well. And yeah, so I really hope Chase Brown can go too. He's super important, and he was super important against the Steelers last time. I think he's kind of like, the Steelers are going to load up on the receivers and try to take away that, and they're going to be really aggressive with their pass rush, which is going to open things up for Chase Brown, and he's got to take. And so, if he plays, he could be a really big part of this game.
And I think we've seen too with Pittsburgh how bad that offense has been without George Pickens on the field. And he's going to play obviously this week. So if there's a way, any way in the world that we can focus on him and make those other receivers beat us, I think that has to be a huge part of Lou Anarumo's game plan to do what you can to take him away and make other guys step up, which they have not been able to do.
Yeah, last game it was he and Freiermuth. I mean, he only had three. Pickens only had three receptions, but they were big ones. I think he was almost 25 yards a catch, and Freiermuth had a bunch of receptions. And then they throw to the running backs a lot too. So you got to be ready for their throws to the running backs out of the backfield.
And then the other, so that's domino one, I guess, to fall for the Bengals. And there's two other dominoes that have to fall. And I guess we'll take them from, more likely to less likely, depending on how you want to define likely. So we have to root for two interesting quarterbacks this week. We need the Dolphins to lose, so we're rooting for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. And then we also need Denver to lose, so cheering for Carson Wentz and the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a weird position, Mark. So you can discuss those games whichever order you see fit.
Well, it's in New York. It's in cold weather, which Miami has often struggled against, though they were able to play against the terrible Browns last week. I don't think it was particularly cold last week in Cleveland, though, if I remember correctly. Rodgers has been atrocious the last several weeks, but you have to hope he has some pride and can bring it, one more time, can bring up a big time performance for them because this Miami team is incredibly beatable. I don't think they looked very good last week. It's just the Browns' offense was beyond terrible. And if you get a cold weather game in the Meadowlands and the Dolphins struggle, if Rodgers can make a few plays, they can win that game. I like the Jets a lot in this game. Miami's got trying to win their third straight game. They have not looked great in any of them. So I like the Jets a lot as an opportunity, but as bad as Rodgers has been, you just have to hope he can summon something, because they're not winning if Rodgers is as bad as he's been the last few weeks.
And I get it. I mean, the Jets were getting absolutely shellacked by the Bills. I mean, it was embarrassing. But Aaron Rodgers basically benched himself and said, "I think it's time to maybe go to Tyrod Taylor." And I get it. I mean, you're getting destroyed. You need a break, maybe, but that doesn't inspire a lot of confidence that Aaron Rodgers is going to somehow come out and decide, "Okay, well, this is the game." we need to win, you know, for pride's sake. Maybe he does, but I just don't think those actions necessarily suggest to me that he's got a lot invested in the rest of the season. But
I mean, if he's not going to, why don't they play Tyrod Taylor? I'd be comfortable with Tyrod Taylor out there in a game like this. But it's my hope is if he's playing, he doesn't want to go out like he's gone out and he's got an opportunity against a bad Miami team to, you know, do something.
I think the rest of the factors I think favor it, but I'm not sure that he has the motivation to go out there and do it. Maybe he does, but my question is, you know, if they get down one or two touchdowns, is he just going to wave the white flag and then you're changing, putting your backup quarterback in the middle of a game, you know, without a game plan involved for that guy? I'm not confident. I think I'm going to pray for it. I'm going to hope we see the Aaron Rodgers of old from the Green Bay days. And, you know, maybe he wants to end the season on a high note and maybe he'll go out there and surprise me. But I don't have a great confidence level.
Well, so the second game we have, and I don't know what your confidence level is here. I'll go with the positive first. There is no coach in the NFL I feel better about having the backup quarterback ready to go than Andy Reid. And Carson Wentz has shown, you know, he's had his moments in his past, in his career. So, you know, if there's anybody I, you know, trust and think, you know, this guy can get this quarterback ready to have a good game, it's Andy Reid. And we've seen Wentz is capable of it. So to me, that's the positive, is we've got a guy who is great with quarterbacks, who's great with play calling, and maybe KC can put the pressure on them early in this game.
I agree. And I think, you know, Carson Wentz has shown what he can do in the past, and Andy Reid's not going to stop coaching. He, you know, their offense isn't going to stop drawing up good plays and continuing to execute. I share the positivity in those aspects of it. I think Denver's going to be ready. I mean, they obviously know what the stakes are. They are at home, so they have an advantage there, and they have to win. It's win or go home for them too. So it's going to be a tall order, but I don't want to put anything past, you know, Carson Wentz and what offense can do for the Chiefs. Hopefully it's the defense I have some questions about, with some of their top guys not playing, and, you know, Bo Nix is pretty good. So
do we know who's not playing? I know Mahomes is not playing, but I've not seen any reports on anybody else. And as I discussed last week, there is some incentive to play guys. They've got 24 days off between this game, or right around 24, depending if they play Saturday, Sunday, or Saturday or Sunday. But 24 days off between this game, or between the last game, not this game, the last game, and their playoff game. Mahomes is definitely not playing. They've said that. I'm confident Kelce will be sitting. I'm confident Jones will sit. But after that, I kind of think it's anyone's guess on who they play, because there's a lot of incentive to have these guys fresh. Now, they might not play the whole game, so it might be one of those things where it behooves us to hope Denver, or hope Kansas City, has a hot start, and that Denver's got to fight from behind, because I do think there's some incentive to get these guys some work, and most of the guys, as long as it's not, they're like key guys that they don't want to get hurt for sure.
Right. And I think that, I don't think like Jones is going to play. I can't say that because I haven't really looked at, you know, Andy Reid has made some kind of vague statements. I mean, we know Mahomes isn't playing, obviously, but this is one of those things where, you know, the depth of the Chiefs is something we can kind of be glad about, because if their, you know, backup guys are still pretty good and still out there, I mean, they're better than I think a lot of other people's backups may be in that case. So I think once we get the official count, we'll have a better idea as to who's playing and who isn't. But those guys, again, I don't think any NFL player, you put them on the field and they're going to not try. I mean, they're still going to try to win that game and give it their all and show, you know, why they need to be out there. And I think that's an advantage to us. I mean, they're going to keep playing. They're not just going to roll over because it's going to eliminate the Bengals, you know, like some of the people have been saying. So I don't think it goes to that level of 3D chess on anybody's part.
Fair enough.
So all that in mind, we got a lot of football to watch this weekend, and it all starts Saturday night. I know everyone's going to be looking forward to that, but as always, after the Bengals, we move on to the Bearcats, the basketball, and see how they're doing. We know we talked about how early January is going to be a big and a nice, tough test for the Bearcats. And what updates do you have for us there, Mark?
Well, bad start to conference play, opened with a loss on the road. there's a lot of panic after that, right? From the fan base. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves is during a college basketball season, the overreaction to every loss. It's tough to win on the road in college basketball. And we'll kind of get to that in a little bit. In that game, Bearcats and Kansas State both shot 51% from two. UC shot 37% from three to their 30%. You'll take that every time, particularly on 19 attempts, which is a good amount of attempts. It's not too many, but it's a good amount. UC out rebounded Kansas State by six. I'd like to see it be a little more. I thought they weren't quite as good on the offensive glass as they should be, but they still out rebounded them. They lost the game for two reasons. For whatever reason, they had a super sloppy start to the game. For the first 30 minutes, they were turning the ball over too often. 16 turnovers against a defense that doesn't pressure is far too many. And this is a team that really hasn't turned the ball over throughout the course of the year. I don't really understand why they were as sloppy as they were, but that hurt. And the other difference in this game is Kansas State shot 20 free throws, made 16 of them, and UC only shot seven, and they made four. And I didn't think it was anything UC really did wrong. I just think it's the kind of one-sided whistle you'll often see on the road. And I'm not even saying, I'm not trying to blame the refs for the game because you have to deal with that. If they're not sloppy and not turning the ball over early in this game, it doesn't matter. If they rebound a little better, it doesn't matter. But Kansas State got that home whistle where they got called for zero non-shooting fouls until they were intentionally fouling in the last 40 seconds because or last 30 seconds because they had like four fouls to give. Because they'd only been called for two fouls in the second half. So I think they were called for five total fouls up to that point in the game, and none of them were non-shooting fouls. They were all of them were shooting fouls. So UC attempted 25 layups or dunks. So it wasn't like UC was settling for jumpers. They were getting to the rim, they were attacking the rim. I thought they just got a terrible whistle, and that happens on the road. So UC should have won. They should have won despite that. And I also want to give a little credit to Kansas State, is two of their big transfers who had been struggling most of the year, but who have had great college careers, came out and played. They came out and made shots. They came out and got to the rim. Coleman Hawkins, he was really tough. And he rebounded well. And then they started Doug McDaniel for the first time, and he was able to get to the rim and get some points, though UC did force him into six turnovers. So he did have his struggles at times as well. So tough loss to open conference play, but it should not be a panic. You're going to lose road games in conference, and the big thing you have to do is protect home court in this conference. If they protect home court, they'll be fine.
And so, looking at this, the score there, is there anything that Bearcats, you think they need to do to adjust for their next game? And that is going to be, let me look at my calendar here. You probably know this better than I do.
It's Saturday against Arizona, Saturday at 2:30
Yeah.
at home.
So is there, so the Bearcats are coming home after this game, and we can still talk more about Kansas State. How do you see, you talked about not panicking. What do they do to kind of regroup and stay focused as they go into this Arizona game next week?
Well, they're going to be focused on every game because every game's big. I mean, this starts a three-game stretch where they play Arizona, Baylor, and Kansas, which are probably the three biggest programs in this conference the last, half decade. Arizona wasn't in this conference, but they're, one of the biggest programs in college basketball. And last season, UC's biggest issue, you're not going to win every game on the road. You're going to have games like this Kansas State where you don't quite play well enough and you get a bad whistle, and that combination means you lose the game. At home, you got to take care of business. UC went 4-5 at home last year, losing games to Texas by one, Oklahoma by four, Houston by six, Iowa State by nine, Oklahoma State by four. This team needs to go 8-2 at home. They need to protect home court in this conference. Cincinnati and Arizona is an even matchup on paper. They're relatively the same KenPom ranking. I think UC is 25 right now. Arizona's 20. Arizona's 19. UC's favored in KenPom to win 62% of the time in this game. Playing in Cincinnati needs to be the difference. Arizona's balanced. They're the 17th best offense in the country. They're the 33rd best defense by adjusted defensive efficiency. They want to run, run, run. They're 34th in average possession length on offense. So they want to get out. They want to run UC to death, and UC is going to have to be ready for that.
And how do you think UC's defense is going to handle that pace? I mean, it seems like they play a pretty good pace themselves, but do you see that as a good matchup for them, or is that something they may struggle against, that kind of pace of play?
I got a little concerned. I thought there were a few times Kansas State beat UC down the court, and Arizona's going to try to beat them down the court every time. So when I'm looking at the keys to this Saturday, the first key I have is get back on defense. Don't let them get early shots in transition. Because if you let them get early shots in transition, that's when their offense is at best. And it's also when they can be the best at offensive rebounding. They're the sixth best offensive rebounding team in the country. And that's the second key. You got to keep them off the offensive glass. They love to attack. They attack the rim. They don't take a ton of threes. I think they're 291st in 3-point attempt per field goal attempt. They want to get it at the rim. And they do that through offensive rebound. They do that through early penetration. And UC has the athletes to clean up on the glass. They need to be disciplined in their positioning. And they need to discipline and not letting them get all the way to the rim. The third big thing they need to do against this team is frustrate Caleb Love. He's awesome. We all remember him dragging the Tar Heels to the finals 3 years ago, when they were, I think, a 9 seed. He's coming off a 33-point game with 7 assists against TCU. But in their losses the last 2 years, he has often shot them out of games. He's one of those guys who's going to get his shot up. So if you don't let him get to the rim and you make him take jump shots, you can really frustrate him and he can shoot them out of the game. So use your athletes to make it hard. Don't foul him. Don't let him get to the foul line. Make sure you cut him off from the rim. Make him beat you with jump shots over the top. And he may make some, but oftentimes he'll miss a lot and he will shoot them out of game. So I do think that's what you're looking at if you're UC trying to win this game. I think UC matches up pretty well with Arizona because I do think they can negate some of the things. They've got the size because Arizona's got big guards and they're really big inside, but UC's got size kind of to match them and to make it difficult. And they've got athletes to rebound, and this is at home. So don't try to get in a track meet. UC likes to run, and UC should run some, but don't try to make this a track meet because that's where Arizona's at their best. Don't let them score in transition. Keep them off the glass and frustrate Caleb Love. Those are how you can get out of here with a win. If you get to 1-1 this week, you'll feel really good.
And so, a couple of things to your point. So, Arizona's 328th in the country, a 3-point field goal percentage, but 39th in field goal percentage overall. So, it kind of tells you exactly what Mark was saying about how they would much prefer to get to the rim. But we got a few minutes, Mark. Tell us, who's going to be matched up against Caleb Love? Like, who's going to be the Bearcat that they pin on him to, or is it multiple Bearcats they're going to put on him to try to slow him down?
That's a really good question. I suspect they will have Dan Skillings matched up with him more often than not to use his length to frustrate him. I mean, Caleb Love is 6'4", but the other thing is, I do think when Day-Day Thomas is in the game, you may see Day-Day Thomas trying to hound him. Day-Day is always he's really quick, really tough to go against. He can play some denial defense of him, so I think you will see a mix, but I suspect they're going to try to use Skillings some in this game and use his length to frustrate him and maybe play off of him a little bit with Skillings so that he if he wants to try to shoot over him he can, but that you're not letting him get those easy points at the rim and you can kind of slow him down that way. So I think Skillings might be a guy you see, but they also may do some switching over top too, especially if they do screens with guards.
Well, like you said, I mean, there's some panic out there in Bearcat Nation, but I think a win against Arizona at home should quiet a lot of that. But it's a stretch run, like we talked about. So after that, Bearcats travel to Baylor, back home against Kansas, and then on the road to Colorado. And that's just kind of their next couple of games of January. But a lot to watch for the Bearcats on that front. Mark, any last thoughts you want to give us in the minute we have left?
Yeah, no big thoughts. Really looking forward to this stretch of college basketball play. Looking forward to the NFL this weekend. Hopefully, the Bengals can take care of business. Also, great job by Notre Dame and the former 2020 Bearcat coaching staff, minus Fickell. Great to see them moving on.
It is great to see them moving on. And Ohio State, buddy, you think anybody could beat them?
Yes, but
And if
not
you
if they
have,
play like they did the first 2 rounds.
that's exactly right. So they have a lot of good defenses to go against. I think all the teams left, have some pretty good people on the side of the ball. Not sure if they could stop Ohio State, but we'll watch that and be sure to report on it later on next week. But want to thank everyone and thank you, Mark, for this first show in 2025, and we'll catch you all on the flip side.
Go Bearcats!